I can't be authentic and not live one way and then tell them one thing as well. So just make sure all my stuff is aligned as a coach is like super important to me.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we welcome Deshaun Butler, the assistant coach with the Boston Celtics and one of the most accomplished players to come out of West Virginia University. A 2010 All-American and the winningest player in WVU history, Butler led the Mountaineers to a Big East championship in a Final Four appearance under head coach Bob Huggins. Butler was drafted by the Miami Heat and spent time learning from Eric Spoelstra and the famed Heat culture before going on to a successful professional playing career overseas in France, Germany, Jerusalem, Latvia, Belgium, as well as Israel. Following his playing days, Butler transitioned into coaching with stops at Wheeling University, with the College Park Skyhawks, West Virginia University, the New York Knicks, and now the Boston Celtics. Known for his resilience, leadership, and ability to connect with players at every level, Butler has brought his championship experience and player development expertise to Boston's bench. In this episode, we discuss how his coaches helped him navigate a major injury in his playing career, a snippet of the Miami Heat culture book from his playing days with head coach Eric Spoelstra, and how the Boston Celtics staff approached keeping everyone focused the next season after winning the NBA championship. Please welcome to the podcast, Deshaun Butler. Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines.
And we're back. What's up, coaches? Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Alan Major, Doug Caputo here, chatting it up, talking some hoops, talking some basketball. We get the opportunity. We have a wonderful guest on today, somebody I know I've had a little chance to work with, very minor, to talk with over time. We have the current assistant coach, player and hand coach, the Boston Celtics. Ladies and gentlemen, Coach Deshaun Butler. Coach Butler, welcome.
What's going on? How you doing? How you doing, man? How's everybody doing?
Good, man. Yeah, wonderful. Welcome.
Awesome. Yeah, awesome.
Good
awesome.
To see you, man. Awesome. Appreciate you doing this.
Thank you guys for having me. I really do appreciate you. Seriously.
No, absolutely.
So I got to say, as I mentioned, I know I've had a little experience with you. I got an opportunity to come watch you guys at West Virginia, see you practice, see your games. I got to play against you guys too, and that wasn't fun because it was a bunch of NBA guys and I was out here like huffing and puffing. But regardless, it was great experience, and you can definitely see what makes a good program good, right? Especially such an elite program as West Virginia. But off of that, you were a standout guard there. You were a standout player, not only in college, but obviously through on. You go into the NBA, have a great, extensive career in a variety of different countries, and then obviously have a great career so far as a coach, as a young coach too. Off of that, like playing professionally overseas to coaching in the G League, NBA, and as we said with the Celtics, looking back, were there any moments or decisions that you feel were like the biggest turning points in that journey to guide you into coaching?
Honestly, I've probably said this a few times before, but I always knew I was going to coach. My dad was a coach and he coached me. My father was more of a football player and never played any basketball ever. And he saw at a young age for me that I love playing basketball. So as soon as he got me a hoop and a ball and he saw I was just spending most of my time outside hooping and playing basketball, my dad took it upon himself to go to Barnes & Noble and he would grab me and take me to Barnes & Noble. I had to pick out a book. And I sit down, we treat Barnes & Noble like a library, which is, I don't know if you can do that anymore or if you could do it ever, but we treat it like a library. I pick out a book and read, and my dad would go through the aisles and look at the basketball books and then find drills for me to do. And then we leave Barnes & Noble, which would be like on Route 22 in New Jersey in between, I want to say Hillside and Scotch Plains. And then we go to a basketball park in Hillside and he would take me out there and we do the drills. And that was my dad, knew nothing about basketball, learned basketball so he can be involved and build our relationship and help me out. And from then on, he was my coach. And as he learned, I learned. He would take me to coaching clinics, and I would go there, listen to coaches talk, sat there, listen to Coach Hurley talk, listen to Jay Wright talk, listen to all really good college coaches talk and speak and learning from them and what they expected of their players. And when I was heading off to college, I'm a player, so I'm going to play, but I wasn't really thinking too much about coaching at that point, but I always knew I wanted to coach basketball. It was just something I always wanted to do.
Wow. It's funny. We literally just had a women's basketball assistant on earlier today, and she was just the opposite. Like, playing career, went overseas, played overseas, and first time somebody brought up coaching to her, she's like, that's the last thing on my mind. So usually with players, it's funny, man. With players, it's either like always thought they would do it or never thought they would do it. Mm-hmm. Very rarely have we had somebody on there that played that said, yeah, I thought about it. Like, it's usually hot or cold.
So, funny thing is, I was the only child. So this is my first friend. So at the end of the day, when I was done and I hung up my basketball sneakers, and this is all I know. This is what I love. And this is what kept me busy as a kid. And I didn't have any brothers or sisters. My teammates were my brothers. And when they weren't around, this is what I had. So I had this relationship with basketball where, you know, even if I retire, when I did and I stayed away from basketball for a little bit, it's only a little bit. Like, I can't not be with basketball.
You like Godfather 3. Every time I try to get out, they pull me back in. You know what I mean? Yeah, man.
Where are you going? I love it.
I love it.
So one thing I want to make sure to touch on, and we obviously do a little like research on people, learn a little bit. One thing that stood out to me particularly, and there was an article and there was actually an interview about it, and it was when you were playing at West Virginia. I know you had an ACL injury, and I hate to bring that up, but obviously there was a tremendous upbringing that goes from there. You go on, as I said, you go on to the NBA, and so there was obviously a lot of positives out of it. But from a coach's perspective, you being at West Virginia, you go down, there's a picture of Coach Huggins laying over you, and then on a podcast, you two actually talked about it and discussed like how he helped, or how his being there and the coaches and the assistants being there really helped guide you through an injury like that to help you get to the other side. Can you talk about going down and especially just that situation? Obviously, that's a tragic thing to have to go through, but the support you had from coaches and how they really helped propel you through and assist you coming out, not only mentally, but like physically, to be able to move on from there.
On the mental piece of that, we just had a family atmosphere in a sense. Whether it be the players who are my teammates, like, those guys are my brothers, like, love them to death to this day. These are my guys. We have a bond. We've stuck through thick and thin with one another on and off the court. So like, I have that bond with our players, but our coaching staff, I love so much. These are people that first and foremost, I showed up with one coach and then I ended up getting another coach in the process. And I still love Coach Beilein. He's a great coach. And I had an absolute blast learning from him. And then Bob Huggins gave me a different kind of edge from my sophomore year to my senior year. And gave me the even more so confidence, because I had a confidence and I had a chip on my shoulder, but even more so of a confidence of me being able to compete with anybody at any point in time, anywhere in the country. Because of that and because of him believing in me and instilling that in me, I always have love for Coach Huggins on that front. So when that happened in particular, you know, like anything else, you hear these stories, you get hurt and you're done. And that's my thought process. And I just felt like the staff at WVU, not just the coaching staff, the entire basketball staff made sure that wasn't my mindset. Starting with Coach Huggins and Coach Harrison and just to Coach Hahn, rest in peace, Billy Hahn. Man, these guys made sure I didn't give up on myself. And it was very trying. I'd never been hurt before, ever. This was like supposed to be one of the best times of my life where I'm getting ready to, I said I wanted to go to play pro basketball, go to the NBA, and I've been working my tail off. And then it's the last game and all that is gone. And between faith and all kinds of stuff, I was just all over the place. And they did a really good job of just keeping me grounded and letting me know that this wouldn't slow me down from the life and the things that I said I wanted for myself. So just that communication with them on a daily was important. And the reason I can have that communication with them on a daily is they allowed me to be around. They allowed me to use the facilities. They allowed me to to be there and be around the guys that I had worked 4 years with, 3 years, was it 2 years with, they allowed me to be around. Andy Kettler, who is now at Texas as a strength coach, love him till the day I die. He kicked my butt as much as he possibly could to prepare me for life after basketball. And I still firmly believe, like, the things we did in that weight room, my mentality was, if I can get out of this weight room in an hour and a half doing whatever he told me to do, I can do anything in life. Right. And he instilled that with me, and he instilled that in me, excuse me, and he instilled just a certain confidence and in accountability. I learned so much from him, and especially in that time, he wouldn't let me quit on myself. And then another guy, Randy Metter, who just retired, Hall of Famer, is the athletic trainer and was the athletic trainer for W for many years. And Doc allowed me to come in there every summer, especially when I got hurt, and just rehab. He was the reason I could walk across the stage in my graduation. And so my mom and my family can see me. And that took a lot for me to do, even at that point. So, like, I have so much love for those guys, because I've heard horror stories about people's programs and obviously in other people's organizations. And then me playing overseas, you hear horror stories about how people just use you and get rid of you. And those people, regardless of a university or anything like that, those people that I work with every day did not use me and get rid of me. They continue to build, and they continue to just make me better. So I love them for that.
That's amazing, man. Yeah, it's funny. They say when you get injured, you feel like a ghost, because it's like, man, Everything's going on around you, but nobody can see you. You can see everybody else.
Everybody else.
Like, nobody can see you. That's what the meaning of being a ghost. Yeah, nobody can see you.
Seriously. That's a great point.
But did, once you got through like the initial bomb of the setback, then you have the surgery, you start the rehab process, then you start to gain a little momentum, right? Like, it's just you start stacking days on your rehab. Did you start to really lean into looking at the game more as a coach, even though as you were rehabbing? Because then when you couldn't play, obviously you can't compete on the floor, but you're competing against the injury, but you still got all this mental energy that you want to put it somewhere.
No, so honestly,
is that when you started to like really look at the game as a coach more, because you getting that 360 degree view while you're rehabbing?
No chance. I honestly thought I was going to play for 20 years after that. I was actually completely blind to the fact of, all right, maybe I need to look in and lock in and focus. I was so focused on my rehab and stacking those days. And geez, man, I got Coach Spoelstra at the time. I got drafted by Miami. They gave me the book. They're telling me, all right, here's what we need for you to do so you can get back. And I was just so focused on that piece. And I wasn't even thinking about coaching, because I'm still, this is where I wanted to be. And I'm close to my dream, and it's like, I'm in it. So I'm immersed in all this new stuff as a rookie, and I got rookies that are playing and I can't play. So I'm just trying to like, not speed my way back, but just like literally focus on getting back. And it was tough, because in that process, within a month or 2 months or so, I want to say maybe, close to 2 to 3 months, end up getting hurt again and having to have the surgery all over again, which was like a killer for me, because I was like, I thought I was doing everything the right way and so on and so forth. And just ran into a bit of bad luck. That happened. And I still made the last cut for the team, and everything was going well. And then someone else got injured. So I was already the last person on the team. And as we finished training camp, someone else breaks their thumb, and it's Mike Miller. So Mike Miller breaks his thumb, and I'm sitting there, and it's still not registering to me at all, because this is new to me. All this is new. I have no clue. This is just a new environment completely. My agents aren't really giving me any information on how this works. And then one day I come into the gym, and I'm getting ready to start my rehab, and I see Jerry Stackhouse. I'm like, Jerry Stackhouse? He's not on the team. And I was like, wait a minute.
Start doing the math.
Jerry Stackhouse is about to be on this team. And Mike Miller was the 15th guy now, and I ended up being released. Yeah, and even then at that point in time where we talked about, the bomb, I felt like, to tell you the truth, the injury was tough, but there was a lot more tough things happening after that. There was more than just a bomb at that point in time. A lot of these things were happening with injuries being released.
You're walking through it. You're walking through a minefield.
It was like, so
that's a minefield.
I definitely was. And it was tough. But to credit to the West Virginia, the guys and the staff at W at the time, Coach Huggins' staff, Coach Harrison, Coach Hahn, at that point in time, Ronnie Everhart was working his way over. And these guys, they allowed me to be around and they allowed me to get right and allowed me to get better and get healthy and just not give up on myself.
It's great to be able to have those people there to help you through, because that's why we ask about it, is because every coach, or I should say a lot of players, go through injuries. And that's a hard thing to navigate and talk with kids, especially as, listen, you're a 15, 16, now I guess in college, depending on what level they're coaching at. But college could be like 18 to 24, 25, whatever. It's hard to be able to work with kids. I've had multiple of those conversations just over the summer. A kid actually, same story, tore his ACL. And now he's been on the phone with me. How can I help coach? I'm like, we got to just take a step. Take a step back, relax. Yeah, he's thinking about how can I do all. But it just definitely helps for – that's why I ask this question, is because from the coach's perspective, there's a lot of people that go through similar things and injuries. So it's good to at least hear it from the player's perspective of what was beneficial for you. So then coaches going into it can know, I know how to work with a kid in a similar situation.
No, for sure. And I completely agree with you on that piece, Doug.
Yeah, it's funny. Adversity. I was literally talking about this with Gary Waters the other night. He was
love G Dub.
Love Gary Waters. He's the best man. But we were talking about adversity, and we were on this topic, and basically said it hardens you and softens you at the same time. Yeah. Like it hardens you from the standpoint of you got to deal with it, so it thickens your skin a little bit because you get this real life thing that's happening. But it also softens you because it helps you have more empathy for someone else that goes through it, so you can help them get through it.
No, for sure.
So you've already and will even more coach guys that might miss a year or might miss 4 months from an injury.
Exactly.
So not only can you just identify with those guys, like you can go one step further. You can walk alongside of them, behind them, in front of them, like you can finish their sentences. Yeah,
exactly. And I'm not gonna let you feel like a ghost.
I've been where you are.
The tough piece about that, coach. To your point, during these injuries, every time I was injured, because you're watching, you're not on the floor with your guys building that bond. And this is in college where you are sharing the locker room with these guys. But also, like, as soon as I like leave the gym in college, like I can go hang out with my guy at his house and then figure it out, or he can come check on me. These are grown men that have their own lives, things going on in their lives. And also, I'm new. They don't know me. So as soon as my time with them, it's really not even time with them. I'm in the weight room. Exactly. And then I get on the floor and I watch them for that hour and some change on the floor. And then when that day's done, I got like a 25 to like 30 minute potential interaction piece with these dudes, and then they're going about their day. So like me being alone is a beast. Being alone when you feel like you're alone is a beast. No, for sure.
Man, that's deeper than hoops right there. That's exactly what that is. That is deeper than hoops. So I want to make sure we touch a little bit on you and just like the growth of your career. Now, again, going back to, you had a tremendous career at West Virginia. Go in the NBA. You played it including the United States, 7 different countries. So Latvia, Belgium, France, Germany, Israel, Jerusalem, and as I said, the states in the NBA. Especially in the NBA, 2 prestigious programs, the Heat and the Spurs, which is just phenomenal. That's great. There's a lot of questions I can ask about playing with Pop, I'm sure.
I've seen that Heat culture book, by the way. Greg Oden showed it to me one time.
I still got mine.
He let me hang on to it.
I kept mine. I still use it. When I was making my coach's book, I'm sitting there. Yeah, thank you, Coach Bolcher. Thank you.
That thing's incredible.
Great coach.
I got to ask, what all was like, do you know some things that were in there that you can maybe like reference to or talk on, like the Heat culture book?
One of the things I can remember off the top of my head right now is just, he had this sheet of paper where he has easy and hard. And then basically just talking about this is easy, but doing this is hard. Just being there is easy. Coming to work, preparing to do your job every day is hard. And then literally the list would go, it's like a 20, almost 30 thing list from left to right of things that are easy and then things that are hard. Quitting's easy. Doing your job every day is hard, like so on and so forth. Like Coach Spoelstra was, if anything, more prepared than I seen at that point in time in my career. So yeah, like a workhorse.
Yeah. When you close that last page of the book, you're like, all right, there's no doubt about what kind of identity
is going on.
I think creates an identity when you
It's grit and grind in itself.
Absolutely.
No, for sure.
I still remember seeing the picture of him. It was like, what, Jeff Bezos in the Amazon or that sitting there by the old computer. And it's like, wow. My guy was the video coordinator doing things the old way. And now look at him.
Yep, he earned it. That's what they call it. The Spoelstra route, man. Not many people did that one.
But going back to what I was saying was just your growth after a professional stint all over the place, a bunch of different countries. One of your first positions was Wheeling Jesuit. And I know that's a sweet spot to you. I remember you talked about that a lot, but Wheeling, obviously prestigious program too. Your first position, which ultimately propels you, there's stops in between, but then you ultimately get with the Boston Celtics. Taking that first position with Wheeling, like kind of what was your mindset and growth? And then just talk about one being at Wheeling, how you guys went there. But then, of course, your mindset going into a position like that, stepping from a professional playing career down to a Division II program. And again, a prestigious one, but to a Division II nonetheless.
To tell you the truth, honestly, I just wanted to help as much as I possibly could. At that point in time, I think Wheeling, it went from Wheeling Jesuit to Wheeling University. So the school had some issues happening before I got there. And a friend of mine, somebody I went to college with, Chris Richardson, who was in the head coach at the time, still is, he had an open position and he brought me up there just to talk to the players. And I got a chance to meet a lot of the players, talk to them, built a pretty good relationship with the guys within the day. And I, at the time, been living in Morgantown. This might've been during COVID. So I made sure I followed the rules with the COVID piece and showed up masked up and everything like that. Got there, talked to the players. And Chris asked me, he goes, you said you wanted to coach. If you'd be interested, I'd have a position open and a space open if you want to. And I jumped on it immediately as soon as he offered it, finished the sentence. I was like, please, yes, thank you. And my whole thought process was just wanting to help. Anything Chris needed, anything the players needed, I was there. I drove an hour and 15 every day from Morgantown, West Virginia, because that's where I was living. And that's where my wife was from. And my family was there. I would drive an hour and 15 every day, get there at about 7:30, 8 o'clock. And I let the players know, y'all, I just touched campus. Whatever you need, let me know. I'll be in the gym. Just can't be on the floor when our prestigious volleyball team's on there. Just can't be there. But any other time, we could work around those time periods, and I got the floor, I'll do whatever you need. And same with Chris. From scouts to recruiting to anything, just bring me with you. I'm here. This is what I want to do, and this is how I can help you. And I was very gracious that he allowed me to do that, because he could have easily said, no, I had opportunity to – not even opportunity. I was looking for jobs. And a lot of people were not – they're not too apt to have – former players on their staff, and sometimes they're not apt to having players who are pretty good on their staff just because they don't want to lose the ear of players. And that's not how I operate, but at the same time, I got what those coaches were saying, and Chris had no ego, which let me know he's the perfect guy to work with, because I don't have one. And if we're all here to help the guys, and I know you're the boss and you're running the show, just tell me what you need me to do. I'm going to do everything to the best of my ability. And the players are going to tell me what they want me to do. And I'm going to try to close that gap and make sure everybody's connected. I want to be the connector as much as I possibly can.
And you know what's great? Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
No, say that again.
No, go ahead. I thought you were finishing up, but yeah.
Oh, no, going. Yeah. I just wanted to be a connector and just help out as much as I can. It's my first job as a coach. And the last thing I want is to get in my way or get in the team's way, especially since I treat basketball and I treat teams as family, because this is just the way I've always done it. Like, this is everything to me. This is basketball. That's just the way I carried it.
Yeah, no, I love that, man. We had a coach on, and her first start was at an NAIA school. So you start Division II, which is great because, again, you get literally thrown right into the fire. It's not like you had a ops. You weren't just the ops guy, or you weren't just video coordinator from the jump. Like, your job title is whatever.
Ever.
That's your job description.
I was on the phone talking to my strength coach. I was like, listen, apparently I'm the guy that's doing the strength, the weightlifting. She sent me a plan that I could base it off of and then tell me, like, it was a beast of a year, to tell you the truth, for me, because I got my very first coaching job. I also, in the second session of summer before the coaching job started, I went back to grad school. So I did a 1 year of grad school, but I missed playing and I ended up going to play overseas for 8 years. So when I came back, I wanted to get my master's and I told my mom I would get it. So I ended up going to get my master's so I can finish. It wasn't a 1 year program anymore. It turned into a 2 year program over time. So I went, took a class in the summer. As soon as I got the job, I was taking classes for throughout the rest of the year. And I also joined the NBA assistant coaches program. Because of my time at the Miami Heat, I was fortunate enough to get into the program. So this is them teaching me how to use sports code, how to use huddle, how to use everything that they use in the NBA, and also teaching you how to present scouts. And just, I'm literally doing multiple classes, driving an hour 15 every day. I was grinding. I'm not going to hold you. I remember that year. It's one of my favorite years ever, to tell you the truth.
No, you grew like a weed. Seriously.
No, for sure. I was just proud of myself. As a player, you don't, in comparison to coaches in my mind, like, players do a lot. And I respect players so much and the things they bring to the game. They're talented. They work their tails off to get where they are. And as a former player, like, I have a utmost respect for players. This was so much more work than I had expected it to be as a player. Like, I knew what I was getting into in general before I ended up getting the job. But players even then don't really understand how much work coaches are putting in. And so to take a job like this, where in turn Chris was going to have me be assistant coach and in charge of player development, assistant coach working with scouts and working with our grad assistants, and also get on the floor, help the guys out, also get in the weight room, be the strength coach, my commute, and taking grad school classes, I was just like so proud of myself, because I was like, wow, I did not expect that this would be my first year into coaching. So,
yeah, no, you're ready for whatever now. So
I definitely was hyped. Yeah. I could do anything.
No question.
It was like,
you thought that weight room was tough. You thought
I was tough. Like, I can't do anything. I'm good now.
This is another level of getting through anything after that. Oh, man, no question.
A beast.
No, that's great. And especially you saying how you look at a lot of your players as family, which is ultimately, that's the key, in my opinion, to, you can have great players. And of course, yes, you have to have great players to have success. But if you don't have that locker room piece, like that locker room and that family bond, a lot of people say family and, oh, this and that. And I feel like a lot of times it might be, you know, some people just say it just to say it, marketing purposes, sounds good. But, like, the ones who genuinely have it, you can see it and you can feel it as soon as you start talking to one person, right? So you can see, prime example, don't let me be the first one to say it, but you now being at the Boston Celtics, I think there's a former player on your team who might be the head coach. It just shows the relationship over the years that also ultimately helped blossom that, which it says a lot about the bond that West Virginia has had and ultimately going forward the other programs that you have been a part of.
Nah, for sure. And that just speaks to who you are when things are tough. At the end of the day, man, you're going to have people in your family. You're going to have friends that are going to go through tough times and all kinds of things. And it's just like who you are when things get tough. And I learned so much from all of my teammates and even getting to Joe. Man, he's one of the hardest workers I know. And he's also been one of the people I know that has worked his tail off to become the absolute best version of himself. And he's somebody I look to, not in respect as a brother, but just more or less as a man who's just grown and makes me want to become an even better person, reach for just for more. Like, he's somebody I look to in that light, as well as a brother who I can like look to for help if necessary, or a friend who I can confide in, and also my boss, who's extremely smart and he knows what he's doing and he shows that day to day. So I'm very fortunate to have the job I have.
Your relationship has got a lot of angles to it, man. That's amazing, because very usually a mentor is much older than you.
No, for sure.
And you literally have a guy similar ages, but like he's a mentor now.
Yeah.
Like, but then that's among other things, of course. But like,
exactly,
when it comes to the boss part, like it's somebody that you work for, you're trying to serve some, and he's doing things that you're trying to emulate. And so, I think every NBA coach has asked somebody with the Pacers about this recently, about Rick Carlisle, what his superpower was. And that guy gave a great answer. What's Joe's superpower?
Transparency. Joe is transparent. He's not going to pull any punches. He's going to be absolutely honest, and he's going to be brutally honest. And I'm not going to sit here and say he just walks through just saying things just to say them. Like, no, there's a purpose to what he's saying, and he has a method to his madness. At the same time, he's very transparent. The players respect that piece, like his honesty. They respect it. They respect him. They know he's not going to lie to them, and he's just going to be himself, like, through and through. I would say that's, to me, his superpower, as well as being smart. Like, I look at, and as far as how much he cares, like, being competent and caring is Joe's deal. And the players know he knows what he's doing and what he's talking about, and they know he cares.
Yeah. You know what's great? You put all those together. So you got competent, caring, then you got transparency, and then the transparency leads to accountability. Because the transparency is the truth-telling.
Exactly. So
the truth-telling creates the accountability. And people always think accountability is like disciplinary, and it's not.
If you're anything, able to have hard conversations.
And yeah, it's like prehab. It's like you're trying to treat something before the injury.
Exactly.
So you have caring, competent, transparent, and then accountability comes through all of that as well. And it shows, because he's mic'd up a lot during games. And it's great. He's one of the best to be a mic'd up. No, I love it.
I love it too. He's hilarious, man.
I saw something recently on YouTube or whatever it was, or Instagram, and he had Jason Tatum during a game, and he had his hand over his mouth. And he was talking to, and then like a couple of times it was like, yeah, all you had to do was boop, and then you had this boop cut that you could have made, like, but it wasn't like he wasn't blowing him out of the water. He was
giving him the information and the urgency, like you just said.
Yeah, that's all it was. So it wasn't like, and again, he had his hand over his mouth the whole time. He wasn't making a show. It wasn't demonstrative.
Exactly.
And there was a few beep beeps in there, but it was like, okay, this is a truth telling session here for 27 seconds they were talking.
He moves with respect. He's going to move with respect first and foremost. That's not his way of doing things. He's going to tell you the truth. He's going to show you he cares. He's going to be honest, like I said, but he's not going to, that's not how what he believes in, showing players up, things of that nature. Like, how could you do something like that and then ask a player to go out there and play his heart out for you?
Exactly. Hmm.
That's a tough line to cross. So
yeah, for sure.
You can coach them hard. With respect, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Demanding without being demeaning.
Exactly. There we go, coach. Love it.
I mean, that's definitely a way to build a culture. I mean, especially granted, and it's pretty evident, the Boston Celtics are one of, if not like the two, I would say two teams are known in the NBA as being one of the quote unquote, I hate to say founding fathers, but if you look back on it, there's probably two teams, I would say, the Lakers and the Celtics, that everybody are like, yeah, those are the teams, right? Like, that we know where essentially NBA blossomed from. But going on to this, like, with Coach Mazzulla, I know you joined the Celtics after they had won the championship. So you're going into when they're at an all-time high. What was the coaching staff's approach that upcoming season when you start to really keep everybody level-headed? Because I feel like that's one of the toughest things. You're coming back from a championship. You just won. Now, these are obviously NBA guys, so this is a little different maybe than the high school and college levels. But keeping guys grounded, it might be the toughest thing, because people walk in with a little chip on their shoulder. Yeah, we won it last year. And it's hard to sometimes pull those guys back. And again, I'm speaking more from a college perspective. NBA is, I'm assured, a lot different. But what was the approach for the coaching staff kind of going into that following season to keep everybody grounded and on the same page?
My first year here was interesting. We had a lot of different themes throughout the season. But coming in, the main thing was, obviously, we wanted to repeat. That was a goal of ours. And we did a lot of last dance things, looking at the last dance, watching the Bulls and the hardships that they faced in order to repeat. Also, just more or less, just we stuck to commit and compete. Like I told you before, we had numerous themes that we stuck to throughout the year. Commit and compete, be gratitude, hunting adversity, caring fiercely, figure it out, choose love and joy and whatever it takes. Like we kept certain themes at certain points of the year just to make sure guys, because these things apply to certain points in the season. sooner or later, we can X and O you to death, but what happened last possession may not happen this very next possession. You got to figure it out. You know what we want you to do. Figure it out the best you possibly can. Be gratitude. Be thankful for the fact that people want to bring their best game to you. Be thankful that you get an opportunity to show for them to bring that out of you so you can compete, so you can show your best version of yourself. Be gratitude. Be grateful for that. Hunt adversity. Everybody is trying to knock you off. So don't get hunted. You hunt. You look for you look for them. You be you create first contact. And just committing every day to competing, that's the start of our season. And I just thought we really looked into teams that are in certain organizations or certain programs that had that won and then had to go out and do it again. And just look how we could creatively climb that hill together. So that was the main pieces of the season this past year for my first year here.
Yeah, you know what? It's funny. When you win a championship, you start to learn that it's easy to look around and you know you need to do a reset. But what you ultimately learn is we have to be the toughest team that we compete against.
Exactly.
Like can Boston yesterday beat Boston today? Yeah. Or can Boston today beat Boston yesterday? And you got to continually ask yourself that question over and over, right?
Yeah.
Because you're the competition.
Exactly. Like, you are the competition. And then a thing to relieve that stress in that, because there's definitely going to be a lot of stress. You won and everybody's expecting you to win the next year. And we didn't win. And it happens. You know, it's part of the deal. But one of those things was like every team that won, besides the teams that we know that went back to back, every team that won had lost in the first round. So just to alleviate this stress is you have nothing to worry about because apparently statistically you're supposed to lose in the first round anyway. So guys, like, why not put your best foot forward? Why not come here every day and compete? Why not hunt adversity together? Why not hunt greatness together? Like, why not hunt these things together and do whatever it takes every day and stack those days being the best version of ourselves to prepare us for what we want, what they're not expecting us to do, which if it happens, it's just like, it was supposed to happen. Every other team is lost after they won. So they're not expecting you to go out there and do that. So in turn, to alleviate pressure, we had those conversations. But at times, man, like our guys just, they came in every day. They were a pleasure to work with. This is like probably one of the best working environments I've been in as a coach with ease. And I've worked at some really good places, man, and the coaches are great. And I enjoyed working with those coaches and the day-to-days were great. And I learned so much everywhere I've been. And this is, as of right now, has been my favorite place just because of the preparation, the culture of everybody in the building, not just the basketball portion, everybody in the building, the learning atmosphere, just honestly, it's been a great experience. Yes.
No, and we've even had a chance to talk with a former coach, but Brad Stevens, the man who's still running the show around there. We've had him on here before. And
that is awesome.
Just to be able to go over some of the things, and he even mentioned, like, he understands it starts at the top and then it trickles down to everybody else. So it's definitely a product.
Sham got on too.
Exactly. Sham, that's my guy. Shout out to Sham guy. He's out there in Shanghai right now with JB. Hopefully he's getting a good meal. He doesn't eat much fancy food, so.
I'm sure you are over there.
Hopefully, my guy Shang's doing well out there, bro. That's my guy.
That's another one on the bucket list. Shanghai, I've heard it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I know exactly. He said he's having a blast. He says beautiful.
Good for him.
Yeah, I know.
That's awesome. Got to do something to get away from hoops for a little while, at least be able to decompress.
You need time.
Let's say, especially at the level and the consistency that you guys are at, you need a little. Need a little minute away.
No, for sure. It's a beast of a schedule at times.
Hey, I got Doug. I got one more before Doug gets ready to land the plane. And this is almost just Deshaun versus Deshaun type question. As you're growing as a coach, is there one or two things that you have out in front of you? What's your next coaching carrot that you're chasing from a developmental perspective?
from a developmental perspective, I would possibly say, how can I put this? Something I've been looking into more or less is just how I can be innovative in being a leader. Something I've been like looking at, just more or less watching how Joe leads and seeing how Tom Thibodeau led, which was great, and seeing how Nate McMillan led, which was a great opportunity, and just seeing their day-to-days and just wondering how I can potentially, if I ever get the opportunity to be a head coach, how I can be innovative and create an environment where I can allow my staff to do what they do and then also do what I do and then combine these things. I feel like that's one of the tougher things I've seen coaches have to deal with, is just that tug of war of, all right, cool, what do you have for this? I want to do that. And then figuring what we're going to do. And we're so crunched for time anyway, as is. And the players are crunched for time in a sense as well. We only have them for a certain amount of time anyway. So just like making sure we have a purpose for everything we do. I feel like that's such a tough aspect as of right now, wrapping my head around that at this moment. But like I said, I had an opportunity this year to watch Joe, and it's something that
masterclass.
Exactly. I've gotten a little bit more comfortable with, as far as seeing how he basically interacts with us as a staff and how he allows our staff to in turn interact back with him and suggest things and not even negotiate. It's just more or less bring these things to him in order to let him wrestle with things he's uncomfortable with, in order to in turn say, you know what, you guys are right. And just that back and forth. A lot of coaches don't do these things. A lot of coaches will sit in their ways, and that's not a growth mindset. And I've learned that a lot about that this year. Another thing I would say is more or less to inspire. I feel like all the coaches that I've had were really great inspirers. These guys can talk to you and get you, as well as the competence piece, but to care about what they care about. And I haven't gotten the opportunity to lead a group yet, but knowing that point in time will come where I will have to give my guys the information they need, and I will have to get them to a point where they care about the things I care about and inspire them to go out there and play the best basketball they can and be the best versions of themselves every day. I have to make sure I'm doing that on my side as well, so it's authentic. I can't be inauthentic and not live one way and then tell them one thing as well. So just making sure all my stuff is aligned as a coach is like super important to me. So I feel like I have that in a sense, but I feel like the guys that I want to be like, the coaches I respect, and I want to be my own coach, but just like I have basketball players I wanted to be like when I was younger, and just coaches I admire from afar and how they do things, you know, I want to make sure I'm in line with how I'm doing things, so in turn I can inspire the way they inspire. Not do exactly what they do, but have the team and have the locker room the way that they have the locker room and have the team. That's important to me. Like that relationship bond with my team and players is very important to me. And I feel like I'm a relationship guy, but you can always get better with your communication. You can always get better with your relationship building. Like there's no
end. No doubt. No, I was going to say there's books like I've been looking at, and I actually was getting some books as of recently to how improve your communication, but to be able to, like your verbiage, you could say one thing but mean something and something could come out, but then you're sitting there looking at somebody like, why aren't you getting what I'm saying? But maybe your verbiage isn't 100%. Like there's so many different ways to be able to upgrade your just communication alone. Exactly. So that's a great point.
Nah, and every word means something to somebody, and you can make a mistake and tell a player not to do something and that's not what you were intending them to do, and just throw things off. And the last thing you want to do is cause confusion and cause a disconnect by just randomly just running your mouth. So it's like your words are everything, and you need to be intentional with your words. And that's something that I feel like I am, but at the same time, you can always get better.
Yeah, for sure. Now I asked that question because sometimes people hear this guy's in the NBA, he's arrived. You know what I mean? Yeah. But that mindset like is that out there. But yeah, I asked that question on purpose because anyone listening, just understand, guys at your level still have to maintain that edge to keep getting better, because your improvement as a coach, all it's going to do is benefit your players.
Exactly.
But like getting to that level doesn't mean you can't just have this mindset like, oh, I'm good. I'm arrived. I'm in the NBA. Sometimes people can think that way.
Exactly.
If they don't understand, just because that's the pinnacle of our profession, that doesn't mean like you're good. Like
you got work to do. You still have work to do. And coach, if I can say this really quickly,
yeah,
you can be an absolute. I've been learning this over the years just by meeting a lot of people, whether it be in college or an MBA, and then some of the coaches I got a chance to talk to and work with overseas. And you can be the greatest X and O guy, or you can be the greatest basketball mind. And if you don't know how to talk to people, whether that be communicating with them in general, or you don't know how to talk to people because you feel that you're so smart that you can just say whatever you want to people, it doesn't matter. The relationship is everything. With the relationship with your staff, just as much as the relationship with the players. The players are not stupid. They know when staff are not aligned. They know when things don't add up. They know when things don't make sense. And just like the players, the staffs know too. So in turn, you know, you can be very caring, but if you're not competent, you're not getting anything with the players either. Like, you could be a distraction. This is something I've heard and then I end up seeing. It's like you can be a distraction. And then also you can be the most competent person in the planet and you just don't know how to talk to people. You feel like you're better than people maybe, or you feel that you are whatever you feel about yourself. It doesn't add up and you need to, it's coaching, man. It's relationships, obviously. It's your competence. It's how much you care. It's how much you can connect all these things in order to reach the person you're trying to reach. And I think, like I said, you asked me what I need to do in these things. There's a lot of things. I could just name two, but there's a lot of things I need to do. I'm nowhere near a finished product. And if I was, I wouldn't tell you I was, because that sounds crazy. It's like we're trying to describe to be the best versions of ourselves. And I don't think I'm the best at that point now. I don't think I'm the best me yet. And I don't think I'm the best coach yet. And I'm going to work to that. And that's the
goal. None of us are.
We're here to do it. Exactly. None of us are. And the sooner you keep that in the back of your head, that's also giving you a purpose and a goal to continue to reach for. No one's arrived. And I hope no one would think they have. That's
insane. I love that, man. Said.
For someone to be at that level too, played in the NBA, coaching in the NBA, and to be able to sit there and say, I'm still not even anywhere near where I can be, it's wonderful to hear, and especially because you understand that. So it's like anybody else, you've seen the best of the best.
Yeah. And the same, Joe was working at a Division II as a head coach. And a lot of people would say that's not a route that's normally taken, a D2 head coach to the Boston Celtics as an assistant. So in turn, it's not about just what you know. Being competent is very important, but also it's the relationships. It's the relationships with the people around you. It's the relationships with the players, how you treat people. It's a lot of things that go into it. And everybody, just continue to do what you're doing. Continue to strive to be the best version of yourself for the right reasons. And just continue to have gratitude and be grateful for what you have. And you'll get everything you want out of this if you're here for the right reasons.
100%.
Hey, I'll give a quick shout out to one of Mage's former players, J. Cole's song, Love Yours. One of my favorite songs. Just because it literally, if you actually listen to it, it tells you like there's always going to be a bigger fish in the sea, but always. Make sure don't. Like if anybody listening to this, listen to Love Yours by J. Cole. I know, Mage, I know you like that one.
No such thing.
That dude's a master.
Isn't he?
He's a master.
I'm still trying to get better, man.
Seriously. That's literally how he operates. We were just literally texting three weeks ago. He was just doing a reset with his family in New York. He's like, yeah, just get my mind, coach. Just think about some things coming up. But like, yeah,
man.
Hall of Famer that operates like a rookie.
Exactly. Mm. He has a bar about that too.
I was gonna say that's in his song.
One of his songs, exactly.
Honestly,
it is.
And outclassed me. I can be the freshman too. Yeah, man.
That's him.
Cole's tough.
I was gonna ask you really if there was any advice you had for people getting from your first position to be honest with you, you literally just hit that nail on the head. Unless there was anything else you wanted to add, but you literally hit that nail perfectly on the head of what three things right there.
Yeah,
I mean, really, just any more advice?
Nah, for sure. I honestly, like I just said, man, just focus on what's in front of you, focus on the people around you, continue to work hard. We are coaches in the service industry. We're here to serve. So making sure we focus on that. That's why I brought up the West Virginia piece. When you asked that question, I just felt they could have easily just, all right, Day, we had a great career and everything like that. So just, you're done. We got guys we need to work with. And instead, they brought me in and then they kept me around. And, you know, that's the promise that they made to my dad and my mom, that they would take care of me and look out for me and make me family. And they kept their word. We're here for a service. We're here to serve. And even in pros, like, it's the same thing. It's just, we're here to serve. We're here to help these guys be the best version of themselves and the best players they could possibly be. So we just have to prepare, do our job, be competent, and then show we care. And we're good.
Yeah, nah, man. This was so good, Deshaun. We appreciate you doing this. I really hope the one word that people pull from you listening to this, and our game can't have enough of it, is joy.
Nah, for sure.
Because your joy for this game, it literally, it's like it just smashes through the screen. Like, you appreciate have a sincere joy for ball, and clearly you have a joy for people and being part of a team trying to do something special. But like, sometimes as coaches, we can forget that this stuff is supposed to be fun. And the only way you can make it fun is to have a joy in your vibe that you bring into the gym. And if you bring joy to the gym, then the gym can be a different place.
Like, for sure.
Make your joy allow the gym to be a different place. But yeah, we got to work. Yeah, we got to put time in. We got to put our noses to the grindstone. We get all that. But the joy should never lose its place in what we do. And your joy for this stuff is coming through, man. So I hope if people don't steal nothing else, there's a lot they could get from this, from what you said today. But man, you got a joy for this, man. And that
coach to basketball coaches, we're supposed to steal everything.
Whatever you do, man, just keep your joy for this
for
as
sure.
Your hood ornament, man. Don't ever lose that. Because our game needs more of that and can't have enough of it. So
we
appreciate you doing this, man.
Thank you guys for having me, man. Seriously, I had a blast. A lot of fun.
Yeah. Likewise.
It's definitely great to be able to see you again. I'm glad everything's going well. And
sir,
of course, the Celtics are we always got eyes on the Celtics. Of course, it's even if we're not looking for them, they're always at the top of the leaderboard. So it's definitely always see how you guys are doing.
And
nonetheless, it's great to be able to see you blossom in from your career so far and seeing where it's going. And I'm sure you mentioned you haven't had a head coaching stint yet, but I'm sure it's probably not very far. So definitely
matter of time.
Leave that in the man upstairs' hands, whenever that may be.
You're where you're supposed to be, and then you just keep allowing that to happen over and over again. It's a matter of time. Yeah. But no,
you control what you can control.
This was a great man, if people gotta get their ears checked if they don't pull some beautiful stuff from this. This was great. So we appreciate you, man. Seriously.
Thank you, Coach. Appreciate you.
We appreciate you and everybody for listening. Of course, and thank you for sharing your story. For everybody out there, another episode, Tied Up, Rising Coaches Podcast. Alan Major, Doug Caputo, keep working, coaches, and keep rising. We'll see you all soon. Take care.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.